With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's Olly.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Coach Unplugged. Today, before we jump in, we'd love to, if you'd leave a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts, those 5 stars do really help. We'd also like to give a big shout out to our sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shoe machine on the market. I'll get it out. Not only are they innovative, unbelievable how shooting machines have changed. You know, I remember when they used to have those long metal racks coming from the court. But how they've innovated, how they've put the trainers right in front of you, it's unbelievable. So go over and check it out. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. It's the one-stop shop for basketball coaches. There's nothing else on the market like it. Nowhere else are you going to get the bat phone to the person running it. No, you know, yes, they might do quarterly or monthly or weekly calls, but they're not on your beck and call. If you have a question, if you have an email, trust me, I will get back to you. I will respond. I will get on a call with you that day. So come over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Let's head off to the podcast. So Coach, I'm going to have you introduce yourself, kind of tell your basketball journey, where you started, you know, kind of where you started and how we got to the point where we're sitting here 7 hours away from each other talking basketball. So if you can do that, that'd be great.
No problems. Bit of a late developer as a player. I didn't really get into it until I went to secondary school. I come from a really small village in County Kerry, which is in the southwest of Ireland. You know, population of about 450, and during the winter it's a ghost town. There might be 2 cars on the street. So, but Kerry's a well-known Gaelic county. So,
okay. So, first of all, yeah. I've learned a lot about it's Gaelic, and what are the sports again?
Hurling.
Yeah,
and hurling and Gaelic football.
Yes. Yeah. Like YouTube them for people that are listening to this. YouTube them. Yeah. Like two years ago when I started interviewing some people from, I had no idea. Like I kind of had seen them, but cool sports. But anyway, they're like king in Ireland. Yeah,
absolutely. And particularly football in where I come from, it's a religion. It really is. It's like basketball in Lithuania. I was lucky enough to go there and do a few clinics and stuff. And you know, it is an absolute religion. So. There was a kid who went to boarding school who came back during the summer and he started playing basketball and a few of us got joined in and eventually then we got a school team going and kind of moving from there. It wasn't until I went to college that I kind of really got into it, joined the basketball club, started assistant coaching probably my second year because our head coach got real sick, wasn't able to travel to away games. Coaching basketball in college and universities over here is very different to your experience of it. You know, there's no department. You're a volunteer in 90% of the cases, and you have no backup. Or if you do now, you're kind of lucky. Back then, there was no such thing as an assistant coach. You did everything. You were team manager. you wash the kits, you got them ready, you organize the game schedule, like fantastic education. And it's a real eye opener. And I look at some of the programs around now that are developing, and programs, particularly in the States. And I just think,
your university system is not even like our high school system, in the sense that high school coaches here get paid and have assistants. And and I've gone through this in another podcast, so we don't have to do it. But the system of how it kind of goes through is so unique that it's different. And I think it's starting to turn the corner. As far as getting young kids to play, I think that's a huge thing in Ireland right now.
You know, it is a very popular sport, and particularly in primary schools. Like it's either one or two across the country now.
Right.
The big thing is the transition to keep them going into secondary school. So you're equivalent to high school.
Right.
And it's just trying to hold on to them, particularly girls. We have a massive drop off in girls once they hit the teenage years.
And I don't know if that's Ireland based. That's here in the States.
Yeah, too.
That does happen.
It is worldwide.
But I think it's interesting. I think that's interesting in the sense that I've said this a billion times, but it's like you got to make it fun and you got to hook them early. And then to be honest with you, in a relatively small country like yours, they got to play multiple sports. Like you got to convince them that more than one sport's important.
100%. Firm believer. You know, my son, 6'7", playing Division 1 National League here, playing college ball. I didn't let him touch a basketball or only a basketball until he was about 16. You know, up to that stage, he did lots of different things, because I'm a real believer in that multi-sport.
Well, it's the different movements, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's what people don't realize. It's like, and especially because your son's a big body, that I think sometimes those big bodies, when they only do one thing, that same muscle, the muscle memory is what causes the injuries, because they're only using the same systems over and over and over again. So if you only drive your car in the city, your car is going to have some issues, because it's stop, start, stop, start, stop, start. You know, if you're only driving on the highway, it might have different. It's the same thing with kind of the player, I think. That's why I tell parents, it's like, play as many. First of all, don't choose for them. They'll find what they love. And then as many as possible. Teaches so many life lessons, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Because unless you're a freak of nature, there's going to be sports you're great at, and there's sports you're good at. And so what are you doing now?
Now I work as a basketball development officer. So I'm one of five basketball development officers who work with the NGB, Basketball Ireland. So my role is part funded by Basketball Ireland, and then I'm also employed by Ulster University. So the way my role kind of works is I spend half my week working on development programs, coaching in schools, helping run technical courses, that side of things. And then the other half of my week is in the university. So it's specifically around social and intramural basketball. And then I coach the varsity teams. So there are top level teams at the university. So this year I'm coaching the girls. Previous years I've coached both guys and girls on similar years. But we're lucky enough, we've got a young coach who's come back from the UK, and he's coaching our men's national league team. He's also coaching our university team. So the other big difference, which you've probably gone into, is here we have a massive club system. That's, you know, colleges is great and you'll play your college league, but for us, college league is 5 or 6 games.
Right.
We've got our inter-varsity tournament in April, which unfortunately we're missing this year, but that's kind of our NCAA March Madness, except we do it over 3 days.
Right.
So, you know, the top 8 teams will come and play. You'll be in 2 pools. You'll play a couple of games on a Friday, a couple of games on a Saturday, and then final on a Sunday if you're lucky enough to get there. So it's pretty intense. We have a lot of Americans who come over. We're lucky enough to be involved with a program called Sport Changes Life. And through them, they bring scholars over here to Ireland. So about 2022, I think, last year. And they're in different colleges all around. And, a lot of them have come from Division 1, Division 2, or Division 3 background from the States and are here doing a graduate degree, master's.
Okay.
And what we try and do then is part of what I wanted to talk to you a little bit about today was integrating those players into a very different culture over here. And I thought it might be something that particularly your college coaches might be interested in, because
I think it would be great. Yeah. So if you need to share the screen or do whatever, that would be perfect. I think that's very intriguing to me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, we'll get that started.
Hey everybody, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like it. Go over and check out our other podcasts, High School Hoops, Teacher Side Gig, and then go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great day.
Okay, so I kind of just wanted to talk a little bit about our culture. So for me, I took over the women's team. I kind of want to talk a little bit about best practice, what worked, what didn't, and then the kind of pillars underpinning.
Okay.
So it was about 3 years ago I took over our women's national league team.
And who does the national league team play? Do you go to Europe and play? Do you go to like?
No. So Super League is the top level here for men or women.
Okay.
And there's 10 teams in the women's Super League. And then there's, I think, 11 teams in the men's Super League.
Okay.
And the next level down is Division One, National League.
Okay. National League. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So our the goal of all the teams in Division One is to win Division One and move up to Super League. So it's a promotion relegation.
Yeah, it's like soccer. It's like the Premier League. Yeah. You win.
Yeah.
I don't know who I was talking to. I'm just surprised the U.S. hasn't moved to that system in some respects.
It definitely makes things more competitive. Your culture and how you approach it, you know, it's not just, oh, I can be safe. This might be a bad year because I didn't recruit that well or whatever.
Right.
You know, you're always aiming to get there. And when you get there, you're always aiming to stay there. You can't afford to have a bad year because then you go back down. So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And it does put that little bit more pressure on you to do your job right, to make sure you recruit right. And a big part for us over here, because so much of it is volunteer led. That, you know, it's about developing a culture that people will buy into.
Right. And now you can play only one U.S. Is that right? Only one U.S. player at a time?
So in the men's, it's only one. In the women's, it's two.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, I did coach the men's and we had a very successful year, 16-17. And then we got a men's coach into the club and we got the opportunity to put a women's coach in.
Okay.
Women's team in the National League. We were very young, but we were at that stage where we felt if we didn't take the step as a club, we were going to miss out on it. So we did that. Our first year, you know, was a real learning experience. You know, you went 3-9, you finished third from the bottom in the league, and it was tough, particularly for the younger girls. So one of the things that I have there is about the youth. You know, we our girls can start playing from 16. So
okay.
We had a couple of underage Irish internationals, but our profile of a team was we had, you know, six girls that were under 21. So, and out of our 12, that's a lot. And then we had a lot of girls that were just early 20s, and then we had a couple mid 20s, and then Americans. Yeah. So, first year was a real learning experience. Second year, we really grew. We started to click. We were lucky enough to get an awesome, two awesome girls, but one in particular was a girl called Collins Scarborough from Siena. And she just dominated in her league. You know, 5'10", rebound, you know, she averaged 25 and 15, and she just tore up teams. And she brought a lot of that winning competitive, mentality to our team.
Right. Is there something when you're on the men's side or the women's side that you're looking for in a player?
Yeah, I guess, you know, for us, we're a little bit different in the fact that we're a university team. So we do have a lot of kids who come here to university for a couple of years, not necessarily on a basketball scholarship, but they'll just come here to go to university. You know, we have a really good academic program. And then from that, they might go home after 3 years when they finished and got their degree.
And so, how long does it take them? It takes them 3 years to get the degree?
either three or four, depending on the particular course that you're doing. So for an undergraduate degree.
Undergrad. Yeah. Undergrad. Places. Okay.
Yeah. For the year placement. Yeah. So.
But some come over and play in the national, or they play in the, what do they play in? Let's say they finish their collegiate career in US and then they come over.
Almost exclusively, it's either Super League if they're good enough and they're picked by those clubs, or Division One National League.
Division One National League. Okay. And then when they're doing that in Division One National League, they're probably going to school.
Yes. For a lot of the clubs, they're going to school, or in the past 4 years where, you know, the country has come out of a recession a little bit, it's gotten to the stage where clubs can afford to pay a certain amount to bring those players in, provide them with opportunities to coach in schools and do stuff like that to supplement their income.
Okay.
It's not well paid at all. So let's be clear about that. But it is a fantastic experience and a stepping stone for those players that want.
And how long does it take them? Let's say if they're doing it to get their, how long does it take that to get their?
Well, the kids that come in with us, that's the other big advantage, that they look to come over here, and we get a lot of really good kids, particularly on the women's side, who've come over here through the Sport Changes Life Victory Scholarship.
Right.
It's 1 year as opposed to 2 years.
That's what I was saying. It's like, yeah, they can come over, get their degree in 1 year, and yeah.
Yeah, and their life experience here, I think, is a big part that, you know, coaches in the States will look at it and say, okay, they're going to come over here, they're going to coach youth teams, they're going to have to be, you know, an assistant coach sometimes on other teams. So a lot of the girls will assistant coach on the guys will assistant coach on the girls, depending on how many resources a particular club or university has. And then they're also team managers, you know, they got to roles and responsibilities for helping promote social recreational basketball. So for a lot of the kids, particularly the D1 kids, it's a new experience for them.
Right. I bet.
It's like graduate assistant by five in 1 year, if you know what I mean. So
right. Well, and they also can, you know, go to school, and yeah, that's a great
experience. And that's part of the life skills, you know. So it's that learning, it's that, you know, having that time management to be able to balance your schoolwork with having to play and train and lead the teams and then fulfill your coaching. But the other big thing that Sport Changes Life do is the kids they bring over, they do a lot of community work. So it's part of their deal. So they do a lot of work in the community working with disadvantaged youth.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's real. A lot of kids who've gone back have gone on, you know, have become assistant coaches pretty quickly, have gone to work for some big organizations. You know, some of the bigger accountancy firms, and some are working like NCAA women's committee. And
well, part of it's just like for some of those kids, they can't, like, if you're an athlete in college, it's harder to study abroad. So that's a great experience for a lot of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And for us then, you know, particularly when they're over here and they're playing, you know, some of the kids come over, and particularly the girls, because I do think, you know, up to now, our female basketball in Ireland has been of a higher standard than people may have realized.
Right.
We've had some Division One college teams come over here and tour and get beaten by our Irish senior women's team.
Right.
I'm going, all right, hold on. You know, this is a country the size of our city. And
right.
So, but we're sending a lot of kids over to the States. You know, I'm lucky enough. One of the girls from our program has just signed with Houston Baptist University.
Okay.
She's gone there. She did a year of prep school last year at the Hun.
Well, let's hope she gets to come and go to school.
Yeah. We are a lot more kids going over to the States and learning their craft and then bringing it back home. So.
And I think that's part of it. I mean, I think that's what happened with NBA basketball in the 80s and stuff, you know, the Michael Jordan era. I mean, it became a worldwide sport more than at that point, I think. And then people, you know, I mean, you look at the NBA now, it's like a third is U.S. residents, I think, or citizens. But that wasn't the way it was, you know, 30 years ago. So I think it makes it better for everybody, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the last thing you want is that dominance of one team the whole time.
Right.
Enough, they're the most talented, and you guys have been phenomenally successful at that. But it's not nice to see teams competing,
right?
And part of that is, you know, sending kids over and taking advantage of the expertise over there. So there's not a lot of expertise here, so a lot of our kids do go abroad, whether it's to an academy in Europe or the UK, or they'll end up going to the States. So
Okay, both of them. All right, keep going. I don't mean to interrupt. I'm sorry.
Yeah, not at all. No. it ties in nicely, like you can see there. So, you know, just look at experience when we're such a young team. It's important that we get good leaders when we recruit these kids to come in. And when they join on the program, we don't actually get to pick, you know, the scholars that are coming to us. They're assigned by the charitable foundation. We can like a guard, or we'd like a post, or that kind of thing. But it there's a lot of factors that go into it. You know, their major versus the scholarship or master's that offered in our university and that side of things. But we've been lucky the last couple of years to have some really good kids. So it's that experience. It's kind of developing it. So for me, it was about integrating Americans and having a new set of Americans every season.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
So trying to understand and quickly adjust to get them to adjust to our system, which is a lot of really self-control. They have to be very disciplined. Their hands aren't held for them. You know, I'll never forget one of the girls a number of years ago turning around and saying, you know, somebody got my chewing gum. And I said, what do you mean somebody got your chewing gum? And she goes, well, every time I played a game, she played for a big D1 college. It was a graduate assistant who handed her a chewing gum just as she got ready in the middle of a warm-up. Like, it was that level I don't want to say mollycoddled, but there's a bit of that definitely about it. So, and it's a big adjustment. So when they come over, they bring that experience. We try and develop them as well for, you know, just to help them take that next step from college, moving on to life. And then from the basketball point of view, for me, it was just about trying to figure out ways to make that integration happen quicker.
Right. And then
for that experience to translate onto the court. So, I probably didn't spend as much time as I should have around the team building aspect. And that was something I really picked up when I was looking at a coach with national teams. And, you know, we spoke earlier about Dr. Kim Rice, and he was one of the guys who mentored me a little bit when I was on my journey with the under 18 women national team a couple of seasons ago. So, and part of that was about team building. So the first thing I learned was we try and do an overnight in the first week or two. You know, we bring everybody away. We'll have some fun together, do some games, get our training in as well. And it's just about, you know, starting to develop that team bond.
It's that relationship building that's so important. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's been a big change in my coaching. You know, for years, I always thought I was a pretty good games coach. I could read a game pretty well and make adjustments, see them out there. But probably the biggest development for me over the last, you know, 8-9 years has been around being more athlete-centered. And I'm trying to get to that stage where I can trust them to do more peer coaching, and I'm trying to put that in. But I do struggle with it. It's one of these things that you just see it and you want to correct it rather than letting them figure it out on their own. So,
I always say there's especially for the young coaches, there's basically three levels. There's self-coaching, where I coach myself. There's peer coaching, which I help others and they help me. And then there's coaching, which is what I'm coaching to the players. That third one is probably the least important. As far as if you can teach your players to self-coach and you can help them peer coach, oh my gosh, you're light years ahead. If I can sit and watch and just, you know, I call it like a puppet. If you can just be the person just moving the pieces around on a chessboard, it's so much easier than if you're doing the big things. Because if you're always self-correcting, it's not going to work. It just doesn't. You're right. I think it's a difficult, but that's a difficult skill to learn too, I think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if anybody ever gets it. You know, it's one of those evolving ones, because you know, talking to coaches and even listening to some of your podcasts, kids have changed and they do change. And as they're changing, you have to adapt to that and move with it.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
You mean coaching? I was talking to a coach a couple of days ago. It's like, if I was coaching the way I was 30 years ago, shoot. I mean, it's not, the game's changed. The kids have changed. I mean, you have to, you know, I always say people used to go to school in a horse and buggy. They don't anymore, right? Things change. So it's inevitable.
Okay. All right. So just keeping it rolling on and around talent. So a big thing for me was identifying, you know, the roles that I could develop with the girls. So it was trying to figure out what were the best systems to put in place to suit their skills with a little bit of tweaking so that it fitted in with my overall philosophy.
Okay.
Whereas I think when I was a younger coach, you know, in my 20s, I really kind of shoehorned people. And I talk a little bit more about that later, where I just said, you know, this is the style that I like to play because, you know, it's whatever. It's not the many coaches are doing it in this country at the time. And these are certain sets that we like to run because, you know, teams will struggle with it. And I tried to shoehorn the players into it rather than tweaking and making it a little bit better. So, and I guess, you know, I have always been big on self-reflection, and I've been very lucky to have some really good mentors here that I could reach out to, you know, kind of discuss day-to-day stuff, discuss bigger picture stuff. And coming out of that, you know, I believe it's probably one of the biggest, and I know you preach it all the time, it's just about, you know, talk to people, get that expertise, have that conversation, and you never know when something little will click and it's like a light bulb going off. You go, oh,
I mean, it's literally why I started the podcast like 3-4 years ago. It's like I was having one of those I almost feel like I'm not as good a coach as I was 20 years ago. It's like the more you know, sometimes the more you don't know. And you know, and there's so many people that want to share this great game because there's so many lessons to be taught. I mean, people want to help. I mean, if someone emails me, I respond. I'm not always able to get right back to them, but I'm always willing to help. That's the thing, is I think that's what coaches want. I mean, we're coaches for a reason. We're not like, you know, we want to help people. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing this past, you know, couple of months has really shown. Like, it's been fantastic, you know, the podcast, the webinars, the coaching that have gone online. And like almost all of these have been free. And it's just people wanting to share their expertise.
It's almost, I've said this too, it's almost too much. Like, I almost feel like I had to stop watching some of the what, because it's like, oh crap, we should do that. I mean, it's almost too much noise. You know what I mean? So I've been trying to do it in smaller pieces. Like, okay, I'm going to watch this today and think about this. Otherwise it's like, oh my gosh, it's like, it's almost overwhelming, but it's great. It is great, but it's almost overwhelming. Yeah.
For me, defense is a particular focus. It was this season and moving into next year for me. And it's just something, because offensively, we've been very solid, you know, a lot of possessions, either the top scoring or the second top scoring team in the league for the past couple of seasons. But it's our defense that I'm really focused on. So a lot of what I've been looking to listen to and watch have been around kind of defensive culture, different types of systems that are working. And I find myself taking a lot of notes and saying, right, okay, do I think that'll work? Do I think this will work? And as we get into the summer, I'll kind of have to actually start sitting down and working out, you know, which ones I'm going to try this season or not. So.
Yeah. And then, I mean, so you'll have an idea of 90% of your roster. You won't know the two American kids or whatever they're coming over.
Yeah.
Okay. So so you have a little bit of a harder equation in the sense that, like, I kind of have a sense who's coming on my team next year. So I can kind of sit and start moving pieces. You have a couple pieces that aren't there and you're not going to really know. That's harder.
And I won't find out until like June, July, and we start our preseason on court in August. So
okay,
a lot of time to figure out. And the biggest challenge is, you know, those two pieces that are coming in are normally our top scorers. You know, they're the top two players that we'll have.
Right.
I have some really good Irish talent, but the whole point of bringing them in is that they're better than what we have in order to kind of, you know, lift us up and make us competitive with the other teams. So,
right.
You know, that's kind of the way that we've been looking at it. Biggest question I kind of asked myself then was, you know, is what does it look like to me? So what is the culture? What is it? What do I want players when they're leaving us to go away with? So, and because it's very transitory, it being the college system and having players come in for a couple of years or young players who are now good enough. So, you know, Anya last year went to the States because she was good enough to go. She went to prep school and now has a D1 offer and is going there next year. Her older sister is already there and has been for a few years. And her younger sister has one more year here with us before she'll also probably have that opportunity to go away. So, and it's trying to figure out, you know, what message do I want them to take with them when they leave? So what will they say that this period of their basketball journey will have been?
And I think that's important. You're asking, I always ask why, but you're asking the what and the whys are always important questions in every aspect of your life, but especially when you're a coach. I love that.
Okay. So, you know, in relation to the upskilling, so what worked with me, what were the big changes from the first year to the second year? So, probably the biggest thing was about honest communication. I'm a very positive coach. I'm not a screamer or a shouter. I like to quietly reinforce the good things. I do struggle at times with criticizing somebody right there in the moment. I don't mean necessarily criticizing in a bad way. And even talking to you, you know, I struggle a bit with the terminology around that side of it. But what I try and do is phrase it in such a way that they understand. But what I found out, you know, talking to the girls and getting them to open up a bit more with me was I was too positive. I was almost too nice about things. I was letting them get away with a bit too much in our conversations and not challenging them enough.
Right.
So that honest communication was big for me. You know, the title on this slide is Coaching Keys. And one of the things, there's an author over here, a guy who's involved in GAA, but he actually just wrote a book recently about, and it's one of the ones that I said to you, it's about coaching the individual in team sports. His name is Philip Kerr. And I'd read his previous books on the GAA side of things. And he just put up his book recently, actually in the past month or so. But
okay.
He ties it all together and gives a lot of examples. But his key was, you know, he said coaching is a lot about having a bunch of different keys. And you have different keys that will unlock different things. And you got to remember, there's no one key that does everything for you. So
it's I think, and here's somebody who's coached a long time. I think every kid has a different key.
I agree 100%.
You know what I mean? It's like that's where I think I've grown as a coach, that I can think back to a team I had 2 or 3 years ago, and I knew that kid I could get on and wanted me to ride him. That kid I had to put my arm around. That kid I had to talk to and correct the big stuff outside of practice. It's like, you know, all of them, we all are in it. I mean, there's 8 billion individuals walking around the earth right now. So we're all a little different. I think that when you have coaching keys there, we all have a different key, which is, I think that's a great, I'm going to steal that, coach. I love that. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, no problems. But then next part was about me upping my game. So, you know, doing a bit more research, trying to figure out how I could look at the total season. And I've got a couple of PDFs I'll actually share with you now, kind of around periodization, where we looked at the total year and how I was going to do with the different stages and you know, input that I was going to try and get from the university. And then started looking at things like, you know, finding that balance of player input. So empowering the players to do more during training so that then they were less reliant on me for play calling, decision making during games. And I was trying to do it in such a way because I think it was easier for me to do it because I had a really good point guard. So that girl who's gone on to Division One, she was my point guard. She'd been on my Irish teams. She'd grown with me that way. And I'd had her for a few years. And it's easy when you have a good point guard, you know, to trust your point guard to go and do a job for you. But what I realized was it wasn't just the point guard that I needed to empower. You know, she was my floor general, yes, but there was times when she wasn't out there. You know, one of the things that I also kind of looked at was trying to balance my minutes a little bit better. So trying to get that balance between player development and providing opportunities and winning games.
Right.
So we probably have the best, you know, time played roster in National League over probably any division over the last couple of years.
Do you think that helped come the end of the season?
It didn't this year.
Okay.
Explain why. But it definitely did towards the end of year one, going into year two. We'd only won 3 games in the league. And then we had a big win in our last league game over one of the top teams. Yeah. And then there was an end of season competition, and we ended up having a big away win by 2 points over a team that had beaten us twice during the season. And then we came home and we actually won a trophy by beating the top team in the league because we managed to get them. We were lucky enough to get a home draw for the final.
Okay.
And then that kicked us into the second year. So suddenly there was a bit of belief we'd actually won a competition, even though we only won 5 games the whole season.
Right.
But, you know, those last three games were crucial because they kind of saw off the season in a good way and moved us forward going into year two. So, So, and then it was, you know, the other thing, and you've spoken about it there, is understanding individual circumstances. Like
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.